This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Tyke.
And I'm Bonnie North. Thanks for joining us this morning. Earlier this week, a diverse group of business leaders met in Milwaukee to talk about diversity. The Wisconsin LGBT Chamber of Commerce brought together the group to discuss how equality plays out in the workplace.
That is an issue the Human Rights Campaign has worked on for a long time. One of the leaders of that effort is Dina Fidas, who leads the HRC's Workplace Equality Program and directs its yearly Corporate Equality Index survey. Welcome to Lake Effect.
Thanks so much. Happy to be here.
So over the past 12 months, maybe a couple of years, there have been huge legal shifts regarding LGBT people, especially in terms of the right to marry. Are you seeing those shifts reflected in workplace policy as well?
Actually, in our world, often the workplace policy predates some of these legal changes. You know, really, since the early 2000s, corporate America, in working with the Human Rights Campaign and other organizations, has sought to implement LGBT-inclusive policies, benefits, and practices, often years ahead of lawmakers. And so where two-thirds of the Fortune 500 already had same-sex partner benefits, now you're seeing marriage legalized and other relationship recognition steps.
Do you see that as being, tail wagging the dog sort of issue, if you will? I mean, do you see legislators more willing to take on some of these issues given the success that they see reflected in corporate America?
Well, I may be biased because I work with corporate America, and so I'm certainly proud of the work that we all do. But, there are almost no public policy issues upon which lawmakers are not asking where's business on this. And so I think certainly they're influenced by the actions taken on the part of major fortune companies and other big employers, seeing the writing on the wall in terms of public opinion. But what's also shifted in a most pronounced way the last couple years is the extent to which businesses are actually weighing in on LGBT-relevant public policy. So just a quick example, in 2008, fewer than 5 major businesses spoke out in support of marriage equality in the state of California during the Prop 8 fight. Fast forward to the Supreme Court decisions of 2013, and prior to that, you know, we collectively were able to produce dozens of major businesses signing on in support of front of the court briefs to support marriage equality. So you're seeing all corners of the corporate world really defining LGBT equality as both best for the communities in which they operate and also good for their own bottom line in terms of their own workforces.
What is it that you see is spurring these corporations to take this more active role as opposed to simply, you know, just being non-discriminatory, if you will?
The answer, I think, comes in a few parts here. I mean, number one, they are hearing from advocacy organizations like the Human Rights Campaign, like Fairness Wisconsin. But probably most importantly, they're seeing within their own ranks openly lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender employees, and also those that we sometimes call allies, those who don't necessarily identify as LGBT but are known throughout the office halls as, you know, the proud mom of a lesbian daughter or the proud uncle of a transgender nephew. And so you're seeing people really cultivate their own voices of authentic leadership within the business community to say, you know what, this matters to me not only on a personal level, but here's the business case for why this actually benefits us, why we should be supporting greater consistency in terms of LGBT protections.
Now, one of the things that you do is to head up the Corporate Equality Index effort. What are the measurements you use? How do you determine that a company, you know, when we see a score that a company is maybe, you know, ranks as 100 or 90 or anything, how do you come up with that measurement?
So our annual Corporate Equality Index does have a discrete set of criteria. And so we examine first, the inclusion of gender identity and sexual orientation in a non-discrimination policy. We also look at the full spectrum of what we call LGBT-inclusive benefits. So many folks may know about partner benefits, but we also look at the full spectrum of availability of things like pension and life insurance benefits that go to a surviving same-sex partner. We also, a newer issue over the last several years that's really become salient is the matter of transgender inclusive benefits. So we've seen tremendous growth there as well. So the first and second pillar protections, equal benefits. And the third and fourth have really to do with internal efforts to make LGBT inclusion real, meaning trainings, accountability measures for management and so forth. And then lastly, what many of us see when we open a magazine or turn on the TV, the extent to which businesses are targeting their ads in respectful ways to the LGBT community, supporting LGBT organizations, and also weighing in on public policy. So from 0 to 100, each of those criteria are worth anywhere from 5 to 15 points.
And you alluded to this. There is a difference, though, between having policies of non-discrimination and creating a workplace culture that is friendly to a diverse workforce. And that must be a more difficult measurement to take.
That's right. It is much more nuanced. And in trainings, I'll often say that these policies are absolutely necessary, but they're not sufficient for true culture change. And so contrasting with all of the incredibly good news from corporate America, in our national study called The Cost of the Closet, we found that a little over half of all LGBT workers remain closeted on the job. And so what that means is they can access partner benefits, or they can even, in cases, get married over the weekend, be supported through a gender transition, but not actually feel okay come Monday morning sharing about their lives, saying what they did over the weekend, or referencing their own individual histories in the same way that other people casually do.
And so how do you affect that kind of change?
Well, first, it's a matter of equipping the large employers and the business community with a sense and scope of the problem. So first, there's a level of buy-in, you know, of convincing corporations in particular that, hey, coming out and the extent to which you can be yourself in a particular business, it's not just an individual choice. It is certainly affected by the environment cultivated under that roof. And so in this study, we were able to not only pinpoint the extent to which people are closeted, but also an equally important metric for the business community, how much employee engagement is lost to the closet. And so when you can walk into a boardroom and say, I'm not only going to appeal to your hearts and minds, if you will, but I also want to appeal to your sense of productivity, employee loyalty, and so forth, then you've got people sitting up in their chairs and paying mind to that. So what we try to do is leverage our research to develop more empirically based training and other interventions that companies can take forth.
Right. This must be a challenge for a company or a corporation who isn't necessarily in the business of asking employees what their sexual orientation is, for example.
That's right. An emerging practice known as self-ID, so the option for your LGBT employees to indicate on forms right alongside their race, their gender, and so forth, whether or not they're a member of this community. And so that's something that increasingly businesses are doing because, similar to women, to communities of color, they want to be able to track the extent to which this group is flourishing in the company. Are they attracting and recruiting at the rates that they expect? Are some people getting inadvertently, you know, sort of sidetracked to certain departments? So, again, the same rationale that's always applied to other minority groups in the workplace now certainly applies to the LGBT community.
Are you seeing particular industries where you believe the most work still needs to be done? And likewise, are there industries that stand out the strongest in these terms?
Certainly. So when I look at a map of the United States, if I'm sitting at my desk, the big red zone for me, with plenty of good exceptions, but the state of Texas has dozens of B2B, business-to-business, oil and gas companies that are Fortune 500 ranked and have never engaged in a meaningful way on these issues. You know, they're not necessarily feeling consumer pressure. The environment is such that it's sort of frowned upon to bring these issues to bear. But again, there are certainly some exceptions. I mean, Shell, BP, a lot of companies have identified LGBT inclusion as part of their as central to their business mission. But in terms of, you know, industries that have excelled, the Silicon Valley companies certainly, banking and financial services. But I think what's really encouraging is that you have a lot of sort of companies that defy conventional wisdom here. You've got the SC Johnsons of the world. You've got General Mills. You've got Alcoa. So companies with huge, diverse workforces, whether in manufacturing, whether in food production, are actually cultivating an LGBT-inclusive workplace.
Is it a matter for them of attracting and retaining the strongest talent? Is it as simple as that?
Oh, absolutely. And that's often the first bullet point, if you will, in our talks. But certainly for employers, when they talk about attracting and retaining talent, more and more they're not just talking about appealing exclusively to the LGBT community, because at this moment in time, more and more Americans know and care about somebody who's LGBT. So you've got millennials actually looking for that HRC seal to say, you know, is this an employer I want to work for? Is this an employer that would treat my best friend who happens to be gay in the same way that they would treat me?
The Equality Index looks at large-scale employers. How does this work you're doing with these Fortune 500 companies start to make change among employers and employees in smaller businesses?
Well, one major bridge between LGBT equality at that larger corporate level and the community is actually through supplier diversity initiatives. And so today we were with the Wisconsin affiliate of the National Gay and Lesbian Chamber of Commerce discussing these very subjects, in which the completion, in NGLCC's words, of the diversity and inclusion circle really leads to engaging with LGBT-owned businesses. So where major businesses historically have allotted money for contracts for traditionally underrepresented groups, women, people with disabilities, and so forth, more and more large companies are engaging directly with regional LGBT chambers of commerce and really tapping into that further client and talent pool in terms of goods and services.
You mentioned the transgender community a couple of times in our conversation. Is that the next frontier? And we've heard a lot about non-discriminatory practices in terms of sexual orientation, but is the next step gender identity in your eyes?
Well, I think a next step in terms of increased focus, I would just caveat that it's always been part of our mission and part of our focus. And so just in terms of the growth and sort of the good news, if you will, when we started the Corporate Equality Index in 2002, just 3% of the Fortune 500 had gender identity protection. So pretty safe to say that the conversation around transgender inclusion was minimal, sort of next to nothing, you know, 12, 15 years ago. That number is now two-thirds of the Fortune 500. You have had some critical legal advancements, the Macy versus Holder decision, in which the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission determined that, yes, if you are transgender and bring a claim forward, it can certainly fit under Title VII protections. So while we have these sort of nuanced changes as we move forward, we also know the flip side of that coin is that we have a tremendous amount of transgender unemployment, underemployment, and some of these quite, you know, pronounced tragedies, as we just saw the young woman who took her own life in the state of Ohio. I mean, so just as there's greater visibility of the Janet Mock and Laverne Cox of the world, you're also seeing greater visibility of the continued challenges. So the silver lining is that we're all talking about transgender inclusion more. There certainly is a lot more work to do, though.
How long have you been with the Human Rights Campaign?
A little over 7 years.
So the progress that has been made in those 7 years must, if you ever have a chance to take a step back, it must be breathtaking.
It is. It absolutely is. I mean, when I started this job, for example, there was not a single piece of federal legislation that covered the LGBT community. And then we had the hate crimes bill passed. So tremendous legal change, tremendous change in sort of what's been in my immediate purview around transgender inclusion in the workplace in terms of medical benefits, awareness. I mean, the last 18 months, I've probably received more telephone calls at my desk from our corporate contacts saying, we have somebody who's been with the company for 10 years. They're going to transition. And then they'll say to me, and we want to get it right, and we need some help. And so that willingness to say, you know, we don't have all the answers yet, but we're trying and we want to get it right, is quite encouraging.
And from a cultural standpoint, the level of sort of change in, I don't know, popular attitudes seems remarkable as well.
Definitely. Definitely. And, you know, more and more I'm pleasantly surprised in a variety of settings, both domestically but also globally, on really the fluency with which people are talking about LGBT issues. You know, I'll be the first to refute anybody who thinks this is a conversation that's only active in a couple places around the world. You know, it's quite active, and really it's incredible how many people from all walks of life are touched individually by somebody – by somebody's coming out process, by somebody who's related to them who's LGBT, and just more and more all kinds of people are really relating to LGBT equality in very personal terms.
Well, Dina Fidas, thank you so much for spending some time with us.
Happy to. Thanks so much.
Dina Fidas directs the Workplace Equality Program and leads the yearly Corporate Equality Index survey for the Human Rights Campaign in Washington, D.C. She was in Milwaukee this week to speak at the LGBT Business Diversity Summit held by the Wisconsin LGBT Chamber of Commerce.
Coming up next, a pioneering underground Milwaukee newspaper from the 1960s and early 70s gets new life online. We'll learn about digitizing the kaleidoscope when Lake Effect returns on WUWM.